That's the music from Buddy Green. He is a harmonica virtuoso, he is. And he could probably tell with his classical medley there. Good morning to you. It is 13 minutes past the hour. And Dr. Don Clark is with us here. Dr. Don from Creation Moments, a biochemist. And we're looking forward to our chat today. Welcome aboard, Don.
Well, thank you, Jim. And good morning to you, Dave.
Yes, good morning.
David is intent on that. You were talking to us a week or two ago, and it was part of the conversation. You mentioned that, well, you used to be one of them, and now you're one of those. And we're talking evolutionist and creationist here. Something happened to change your course midstream. Dr. Don, tell us about that. You used to believe in evolution, didn't you?
Oh, I certainly did, yes. When I was, it wasn't until I was saved, which was at the age of 35, mm-hmm. that my whole perspective changed.
So you'd had a lot of years of official training then, of cultural indoctrination there into the wiles of evolution. What happened to change your mind?
I had the evolutionary story down pat. I mean, from the Big Bang all the way to molecules to man and everything. And you know, I was certainly convinced at the time that that was the way things happened. Let me just say I was raised a Catholic, but never heard the gospel message, mm-hmm. and so I really didn't get to hear the gospel message until I went to church one time with my wife and family, young family at that time, to a non-denominational church, and it was an Easter service, and heard the gospel message. The Easter service was completely different than I had experienced in the Catholic Church, and I said, well, you know, this is different, but I didn't accept the Lord at that time. I had to wait until the next major holiday, which was Christmas, and that service. And in between that time, Andrea, my wife, had her home group praying for me, and the church was praying for me, and my oldest girl, Ari, she asked me one time and said, Dad, why don't you go to church with us? Because my wife was going to church on Sunday morning and Sunday evening and Wednesday night service, and then she was also going to this thing called a home group on Saturday night. So this was getting, you know, quite irritating to me at the time, and because, you know, I was pretty much, except for the Sunday morning service, I was left home with the kids, which, you know, wasn't a bad thing, but it was just, you know, not seeing my wife all that time was a little bit annoying. And then at the Christmas service, I agreed to go to the Christmas service, and again, that was something completely different than I had experienced in the Catholic Church. And as the service was going on, the Lord was really convicting me. And sometimes we throw out fleeces because we don't really know whether or not God exists. And so prior to that, just like a month or two prior to that, I had made a fleece with the Lord. I threw out a fleece. We were selling one house, and I was selling it myself, and we were buying another house. And it didn't look like the deal was going to go through. The buyers for our house just did not, they weren't getting their loan approved. So that meant that our house was, the house that we were interested in was going to go through too, because we needed the equity out of our home in order to buy our house. So I went to the new house and I just kind of said, well, Lord, if you exist, let this deal go through. And of course, as you might guess, that was an easy thing for the Lord to do. Mm-hmm. And the deal went through, and I said, well, okay, I will make a commitment to, you know, to basically check him out, to check, you know, to see if God is real or not. So by that time, it was Christmas, and the Christmas service was going on, and the Lord was really convicting me. And by the end of the service, the pastor gave an altar call or a call to say that anybody who wants to receive Jesus as Lord and Savior, you know, just raise your hand or lift your eyes, or I can't remember exactly how it went. But I was one of those, and so the Lord continued to work on me. But it took about 3 months of wrestling with, is God real? Yes, he's real. No, he's not real. Is he real? Yes, no. He, just going back and forth.
Wrestling with your scientific mind, I'll bet.
I was wrestling internally with my mind and saying, well, how could this be? So I started going to the home group that Andre was going to, and one of the first commentaries on the Bible that I picked up was by Henry Morris, called The Genesis Record. I started reading that, and it was like the scales fell off my eyes. Now, I didn't have literal scales, of course, but, you know, it was like, gee, the understanding came. So I'm reading this commentary, and I'm saying, this is exactly how it happened. I mean, there was, there's no other explanation for it. I mean, there is the things in this world are so complex. I mean, how could you ever possibly believe that this came, you know, that just evolved, that things slowly changed, you know, from one thing to another? And so it was a revelation to me.
You were in your mid-30s then. Were you a scientist at that point in your career?
Oh, very much so. Mm-hmm. Very much so. I mean, I was, we were out in California. I was working for a pharmaceutical company, and you know, I was directing a development group at that point in time, and my career was doing well. And I was, it was a complete change for me. I was one that was transformed, certainly in my mind.
Did your cohorts, your coworkers, fellow scientists, and everything in the pharmaceutical end of things, how did it affect them? Did they see changes? Did they question your logic in all this?
Most of them just patronized me, mm-hmm. And I mean, there were some who were seeking, and I talked with them, and I had some good friends that worked with me, and I had shared the gospel with them. And it's interesting because years later, I learned that they have given their hearts to the Lord. So that was the early seeds that I was planting. They, you know, bore fruit. But for the most part, it wasn't as adversarial as it is today. And so they kind of humored me and said, yes, yes, okay, that's good for you. And I'm glad you, you know, found something that you can believe in. But, you know, that's not our understanding of the world around us. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting time. And I just... it was living out at that time. We were living in Southern California, and that area was very ripe with radio preachers. Mm-hmm. So you had Chuck Smith, Chuck Swindoll, Chuck Missler was out there. Raul, I mean, these folks from you know, these just very, very powerful radio speakers, mm-hmm. that I was listening to constantly. I mean, when I wasn't working, even though I live 15 miles from work, living out in Southern California, that was taking 45 minutes to an hour and a half.
Now, what year was this? How long ago was this? 80s, 70s?
No, I think it was 1985.
Okay.
Yeah, it was in the mid 80s.
And I asked because I was in Southern California in the 70s and up until about 83, and I listened to many of those same radio pastors. And I remember Fred Price on TV, black pastor from Ever Increasing Faith Ministries, was important to me and my coworkers. It all happened in about the same place and the same time for me. So this story is especially fascinating. I'm wondering, as your career as a scientist continued and bloomed, did you ever have to pay a professional penalty the way we read some college professors who oppose evolution and people in politics and people in science, the penalties they pay for admitting to the world that they are creationists, that they're believers. Did you ever have to pay a price for that?
No, I was, I guess, in that era when the scientists respected one another. Religion was not, or a relationship with Christ was not considered a black mark against you as it is today.
Why is that today? Where did the changeover take then? We've isolated somewhere between the mid-80s and the present day. We could probably lop the last decade off of that because the battle's been going on for some. When was the battle engaged between evolution and creationism? Because I know it's been talked about in scientific circles for centuries. But when did this pall come over the belief? Would it have been the 90s?
It was forming in the 70s. But I think it really took hold in the early 90s, and the universities were getting more blatant. Our government was getting more blatant. The National Science Foundation Department of Education was growing by leaps and bounds. That's when the propaganda started really going out against the creationists.
And I'm wondering if
against creationism and saying that evolution was fact.
Now, would that have been part of the impetus for the founding, the start of Creation Moments and your involvement with them? Because I know you're a board member now with Creation Moments. How did that come to be?
Well, Creation Moments actually has been around for over 40 years, so it started even long before I was a believer. And I got involved with Creation Moments from a friend of mine, Mark Cadwalder, who's the chairman, and I'm the vice chairman of the board. And Mark was asked to be what was called the clippings editor for a newsletter that Creation Moments, which was then Bible Science Association, put out. And the clippings were just little short stories, scientific stories, kind of relating back to the Bible. And they were kind of like the it was a written form kind of of the Creation Moments that we have today. And Mark was writing these and editing these clippings, and he asked me, he said, Don, you're a scientist. Well, why don't you try your hand at some of these? So I started writing some of those as well, and then the next thing I know, I'm being asked to be on the board. And so I've been on the board ever since, which has been, I think we were at the last board meeting, we were calculating, well, how long have we been on the board? Mm. And some of us have been on the board for, over 13 or 14 years now. So it's been a good association with Creation Moments, and we've seen many things come and go, but we're still going strong and hope to even in the future.
I want to mention the Creation Moments is a great resource for people, and you can visit their website at creationmoments.com. You can also link to them from our website, brokenroadradio.com. And you just find a terrific resource of information and contacts, and you can listen to the radio programs there and check out the history. Deserving of your support, certainly of your attention. You can learn a lot. And the thing I like, Don, about the Creation Moments is it equips you to discuss that debate intelligently with some evidence from Ian Taylor and his radio program. So you can go to your local neighborhood evolutionist hangout and say, let's talk about this, and come with some ammunition and some good hard information, which is scientific information, isn't it? Because it obeys the laws of science, of research, and the use of our senses, logic, all those things apply to creationism as well, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. We don't check our our brains at the door when we we start talking about creation. I mean, or doing investigation, scientific investigations, whether or not the creation model, you know, fits the data a little bit better than, or in this case, I believe a lot better than the evolutionary model.
Well, it's always impressed me that the folks on the side of evolution and science come to a point, and it's like there's this mental block there beyond which they won't admit anything could exist. And yet they're without a fundamental explanation of how something is made out of nothing. And they just kind of throw it up in the air, and it hangs suspended there waiting for proper handling.
Yeah, and as we've discussed before, the reason why they believe, I believe, the reason why they believe that, and because I'm an example of it, is that their minds are blinded by the enemy. And that's, I think, the fundamental reason. So we're not talking about a logical discussion with someone. We're talking about a spiritual battle that is going on, that is keeping them in bondage to, you know, to a false belief.
So something spiritual and has to happen first, then, to make them reachable. Is what you're, is what I'm hearing from you.
That's right. That's right. So you have to reach them with the love of God. You have to reach them through the Holy Spirit, through prayer, through interceding, you know, for them. Just like you have to reach any unbeliever. But in the, you know, in the scientific community, in you know, those that truly have a strong belief in evolution, it's a religion for them. They wouldn't say that. They don't recognize it as such, but it truly is. It's because it's that's their God, and instead of the God of the creation, they make the creation God. And of course, we can understand that from Scripture because Paul talks a lot about it. But until you have the revelation from the Holy Spirit of the truth, your mind is blocked. And it's, I believe it's a spiritual blocking by the enemy.
David, ideas fulminating over there? You've been intent on your,
well,
on the conversation.
We've got this house we want to sell. And you know, and I guess I'm wondering if it would work for believers already, if we've already. But no, that's neither here nor there. One of the things that I was thinking about, and I know we've talked about this before, Don, but and you know, I think about the graduate class I took a number of years ago on the history of science, and the changes of it, you know, and changes in scientific acceptance or scientific belief in facts and things. And there seems to be a time period where there are a number of steps. You know, at first somebody suggests this outlandish occurrence, you know, for example, gravity makes your apples fall down in your head. And then, you know, the dissemination of this new radical idea, and the entire scientific community gets up in arms and said, that's hogwash, that's absolute nonsense, that's just nuts. And then there seems to be a critical mass when the new information expanded and is accepted by a large number of people, and then it's almost like the dam bursts. Somebody pokes a hole in the balloon somewhere, and the new law takes place, or the new law becomes accepted. And I wonder if there's a time frame if for that whole process, and if we're towards the end of it, or somewhere in the middle? Do you know what I'm talking about, Don?
Good marketing era.
Well, like, kind of, that's like, a long,
like,
rambling
like
question.
Einstein's theories, maybe, were a watershed and started thinking. Of course, I think Einstein was a man of God, ultimately.
Yeah, but I mean, none of these ideas were accepted instantly. I mean, the new ideas were always, you know, at first, you know, people would walk around scratching their heads and saying, "You think what?" Then over an amount of time, other scientists would say, "That kind of makes sense." You know, and I'm kind of seeing that in a sense in this global warming craze or this global warming nuttiness that has gone on for a period of time, and slowly the support for it's ebbing away. At least it seems to me.
That's right, and you would hope that over time, you know, the truth would prevail. But unfortunately, you know, men being, you know, who they are, you know, that we're first of all wicked, and so unless we have a God that points us to the truth, it's very difficult to actually come up with the truth. But, you know, you could look at the world around us. Let's just take the Einstein and Newton, for example. I mean, Newton's laws were macroscopic. And so, you know, you throw a ball, it's going to have this type of curvature because of gravity pulling on it, and you've got the force of the ball going out, and but gravity's pulling on the ball, so the ball, you know, ultimately winds up on the ground. And so through Newtonian type of physics, you could calculate that arc very easily and very accurately. But as you got into the type of things that Einstein was dealing with and his buddy was dealing with, you had... it was a whole different realm. I mean, we were not, you know, just talking about, you know, the simple physics anymore. We were talking about phenomena that couldn't be explained by Newtonian physics. Einstein comes along and says, you know, I think energy and matter are linked. And they're linked by the speed of light squared.
Mm-hmm.
And... that was a revelation. And so he had to develop, of course, he was not very good at mathematics. You would think that Einstein was a genius at mathematics, but that was his worst course and, when he was growing up. And so he had to recruit mathematicians in order to help him with first special relativity and then general relativity and come up with and say, hey, you know, energy and matter are linked. And it's an interesting thing because you can take this, you know, the energy and matter type of equation and say, okay, well, where did this energy come from? If energy is matter and matter is energy, and we go back to one of our discussions before, you can see that the energy coming from the very voice of God makes a whole lot of sense. And so we can take these things, you know, of science, and now, you know, the general relativity has been proven through some experiments far, you know, beyond Einstein's you know, life. I mean, at that point, there were just a bunch of calculations. But later on, cosmologists were able to prove many of the things that Einstein was suggesting through his formulas.
Got to really almost border on philosophy, though, didn't it? I mean, it's like science develops the Age of Enlightenment, the 18th and 19th centuries. Einstein comes along, and there's this sea change in scientific thinking. He almost brought in philosophical concepts and dared science to prove it.
Yes, that's true. And at the same time, he was having a conversation with Niels Bohr. And Niels Bohr, of course, was dealing with a model for the atom and for, you know, hydrogen, just the simplest one.
Mm-hmm.
And Niels Bohr was saying, I don't know, we got some strange things going on. It looks like we cannot pinpoint exactly where the electron is. You know, know its velocity and know exactly where it is at any one time. It looks like we've got some fuzzy stuff going on. And one of famous Einstein's comments to that was, well, God doesn't play with dice.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
God is not someone who plays with dice. And so the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, all this stuff was going on at the same time. And Heisenberg's uncertainty principle came in, which said that you can't know both the position and the velocity at the same time. And so there's a trade-off there between one or the other. Either you know the position, but you don't know what the velocity is. Well, you know what the velocity is, and you don't know what the position is. So all these things were interplaying. with one another, and all these weird ideas. Jump forward many, many years, and you know, today we still have this discussion going on, but it's at the it's at the creation of matter itself, and it's this really fuzzy stuff that we called quantum mechanics,
and the God particle.
Yeah, and the God particle is there. What holds all this stuff together, and it gets weird really fast, because you've got particles that seem to disappear and reappear. It's Star Wars, Star Trek type of stuff. Beam me up, Scotty type of things that you can see happens. But it's explaining it, why.
It's interesting you should bring that particular thing, Scotty, and beam me up, because I was just reading yesterday about a grant of money to three scientists who are experimenting with moving matter particles by laser beam. And it's kind of the precursor to that that beam me up motion, Scotty, where you can actually disassemble and reassemble atomic structure in another place from where it originated. So just a lot there. You're right. There is a lot of fascinating study going on, and I almost feel like we're on the cusp of another huge discovery that will open up some doors to us. And I guess there's that feeling in both theological and philosophical and scientific worlds. It's like we're on the edge of something, that there's a major change ahead of us. Do you get that notion at all, Dr. Dunn?
Well, we are pushing the envelope for sure. I mean, we build these gigantic cyclotrons that are miles and miles and miles and miles in diameter. And, we smash particles together looking for answers, to how did this stuff come about, and looking for those mysterious particles or subatomic particles that we can't see, and is all of this made up of vibrations, kind of the string theory type of thing, that there are no particles, it's just vibrations, and which would go along with the very voice of God type of thing. And so are we ever going to figure this out? I think not without God. I mean, I don't think so.
I'd agree. Without God, there's not much that's going to happen except evil.
Right.
And maybe it's that sense that there's something's changing here. Something, and it could be, I don't know whether it's next year or next decade or next century, but it's like there's a huge leap in knowledge. And I got to believe and fervently do pray that it's from the spiritual realm, and that it's done by God. Whether it's the second coming or whether it's just some sort of a door to heaven that opens and we get to peek in, I'm not sure how that could happen. I want to mention to listeners that your broadcast with us of a couple of weeks ago, when you talked about the voice of God and really gave us a scientifically oriented explanation of how that could result in the origin of matter, was fascinating. And folks can go back and listen to that program on our audio archives page. If you go to brokenroadradio.com and click on audio archives, you'll see you can choose the conversations of Doug Greenwald from Preserving Bible Times, or Reverend Dr. John DeLancey, who's our resident archaeologist, or Dr. Don. And go to Dr. Don and pick one of the last couple of weeks of conversations. You can replay that anytime you're of a mind. It'll take about a half an hour typically. But I invite you to do that, and you're going to learn a whole lot, as we learn a whole lot from Dr. Don Clark every week. Don is a biochemist, a member of the board of Creation Moments, and Don, we're grateful for your presence today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Jim, and thank you, Dave. And as always, it's been a pleasure. And you throw up some questions, and I was happy to tell the listeners about how I came to the Lord, really, and. It's always through prayer. Somebody is praying in the background.
That's a good way to start. Dr. Don, thank you. Music from Alton McLean Scarborough on this Broken Road Radio Monday morning. Good morning to you.